Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists.
Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
Hello, this is Rahasia Uncensored on the BBS radio show, The Spiritual Activist Channel. Talking to you about those pesky little topics that the powers that be would rather us not talk about, or for that matter, even look at. Because they know if enough of us wake up and see what's really going on in our world, we have the power in us to transform this world. Remember, this is our world and our children's future. And like it or not, we are the gatekeepers that will determine if we even have a future. Well, here we are today, getting ready to do another show, and I've given this a lot of thought. What am I going to do the show about tonight? And last week, or 2 weeks ago, I did a show on 5G, and that's really important because there's more to that rabbit hole than meets the eye. But I started looking into something else that I can't really even put into print on my magazine, The Lotus Guide. Because some of it is just too unsettling. But I'm going to sort of ease into that situation over this next 50 minutes with all of you, because we have to start paying attention to this, what I'm talking about. And it has to do with human trafficking and child sex slavery and, believe it or not, sacrificial rites that are going on this planet, and everything from the Vatican to Hollywood. And it's all coming out now. It's all coming out. So, but we need to be ready for it. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I can talk to him about anything. Conspiracies and Bigfoot and JFK, UFOs, it doesn't matter. But I started talking to him about this subject, and he had to shut me down. He says, man, I can't take it. This is too much for my mind. I cannot even think about this. I don't want to hear anymore. And what I was talking about is what I'm going to be talking about tonight to you. So this is a warning. If you're squeamish, or if you're one of the new agers that think that you just simply can't look at anything negative because it's going to, you're going to attract it to you or whatever. And I'm not judging that. Maybe there's a place for those people. Maybe there's a place for the people that refuse and can't look at negativity and the darkness. Maybe we have to have a certain amount of people to hold the light. That's possible. And that's fine. But there's others of us that need to really be strong and be spiritual warriors. I mean, to the very essence of what that means throughout history. Throughout history, we've had people that have confronted evil, confronted the darkness, confronted whatever it was bad. I mean, even in the Bible, Jesus, the only time he really got upset is when it came to the money changers, which is what we call the bankers, and the church. Being in the church with the banks. And this is exactly what's happening today. Everything is mixed. The corporations, the banks, everything. Do you know that we're like $22 trillion in debt, according to the global clock. But if you look at the global condition, we're almost $70 trillion. And that's not even counting credit card debt and everything. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because there's a lot of things that I could be talking about. But I want to tell you about some of the things that are pretty bad, like geoengineering, for instance. That alone is a serious, serious topic. They're still spraying us with toxins and poisons and almost bragging about it at this point. And PG&E, I mean, they burned down our community because they had a tower that was 99 years old. They said that they inspected it, but come to find out how they inspected it was with a helicopter flying over it. And they didn't see that the the little metal cleats that hold the wires were all rusty, and the tower ended up falling over. And there's four or five other towers that this happened to months and months ago, and they never performed one time inspection on any of them. And you have to remember, PG&E, if you've ever watched Aaron Brockovich, PG&E is the company that dumped toxic chemicals into the water supply of this community, and not only didn't tell them that it was bad, but actually told them that it was good for them. But obviously it wasn't. So we're dealing with people that on the surface, they're really, really bad. But when you dig into the inner sanctum of what they're doing and who they are, it gets pretty dark. And that's the reason for my warning to you. You know, if this isn't for you, and it's not for everybody, and believe me, it's taken me a while to get to the point to where I can look at these things, transform them, and flush them out of my system so I can deal with them. And you're going to see what I mean here shortly. We're going to listen to a, I'm just going to play the whole thing because this guy does it so good. It's the International Tribunal for the Natural for Natural Justice. And it has to do with mostly child trafficking, because once you realize what's going on, I'm telling you, once it grabs you, you have to do something. You can't go back to sleep. And this is the whole point. Maybe this is what it's going to take to wake people up to what's going on at the corporate level, the judicial level, the religious level. This is happening all over. And this guy's going to cover this a little bit in this talk that he gives. And this is a tribunal of, it's a consortium of, he used to be with the CIA, but there's people sitting there that are from high levels of law enforcement and international police, the Interpol, all over the world. People are getting together now and forming these alliances to say enough is enough. So let's listen to Robert Steele right now, and then I'll get back to you.
Is a court of inquiry. It's not an adversarial court. It's a nonprofit educational event. And with enormous, enormous energy and intelligence, all of us have been brought together to try to bring out some of the aspects. So if I may, I have prepared an overview statement based on my work these many past weeks. And I want to just say that as a parent and as a patriot, I'm absolutely outraged by what we're allowing to happen to our children. Humanity is judged on how you treat the weakest member of the society. Let me say that although pedophilia, which says child love, has nothing to do with the abuse of children, these children are not just kidnapped and in some cases bred by families as a cash crop. We have people in the United States of America that breed children in order to sell them. And when they are sold, they come without birth certificates, which means it's easier to kill them and have no one ask where they are. We're also importing children by the plane load. Again, children who have no documentation. It's not just child slavery or child sex abuse. It's also child torture because you have adrenalized blood. You have the whole blood drinking ceremony of the satanic world. It's also the use of children for harvesting body organs. We'll have the Falun Gong testimony tomorrow. One of the reasons that the Falun Gong are so popular is because they're so healthy, so that you can harvest their body organs and get the very best. And then you have ritual ceremonies and ritual murder, as well as incidental murder. But I know the system. I've been a spy all over the world. I have created the Marine Corps Intelligence Command. I have trained intelligence and law enforcement representatives, over 8,000 of them from across 66 countries. They are all, without exception, good people trapped in a bad system. And one of the most wonderful things that this court could achieve, now that we've had Pizzagate, for example, which opened people's mind, is we could achieve an opening of the public mind and an absolute imperative from the public to governments, including the U.S. government, which I think is the center of gravity in so many ways. I have found in my research and preparation for this court and all of the work that will follow that most organizations that end up being used to prey on children, Oxfam is a recent example, all of the United Nations organizations, the Boy Scouts of America, all of the child services agencies across the United States of America, they did not start out as organizations to prey on children, but they attract pedophiles. And ultimately, pedophiles end up rising in the ranks and controlling those organizations. So that an organization that initially started out in the service of children becomes an organization that is, in fact, hunting children. And one of our distinguished commissioners has written an absolutely wonderful book called Child Hunters, which I recommend to all of you as a brief on this. Now, it's not my working assumption, but the working assumption yet to be proven that the totality of the children disappearing worldwide is toward 8 million people, toward 8 million children. In the United States of America, the acknowledged number, not counting the children being bred without birth certificates, not counting the children being imported without documentation, is between 600 and 800,000 a year. Now imagine Africa and East Asia and all these other locations. I personally believe that the number we want to try to document is rising well beyond the official figures, and we have yet to learn what the actual number is. Okay? The other working assumption is, how long do these children survive within this system? What I am hearing from the witnesses that I've talked to is 2 years. It may be longer. It may be 4 years. It may be 6 years. But by and large, these children are so abused. I mean, we're talking rapes by the hour and so forth, that they reach their expiration date within 2 years. And then they're murdered with impunity, or they're ritually murdered if that's what they've been bred for. So I think we need to document this. No one else has done this before in a systematic manner. This commission is rendering a signal service by seeking to do an overall view in the public interest. This will be a massive, massive undertaking. And while the preliminary attempt is to do a 6 month to 9 month endeavor, subject to funding availability and the availability of witnesses and also prisoners. There are a number of prisoners who can be debriefed, who, when properly debriefed by specialists, can really give a deeper understanding that has not been achieved by existing law enforcement and other agencies, because they simply treat these people when they catch them, in those rare instances when they catch them, as disposable goods to be thrown into prison and forgotten about. And tomorrow we will have some expert testimony from one of our commissioners who can speak to this far, far better than I. William Binney is my counterpart. He is for NSA what I am to CIA, which is to say, he is saying, as I am saying, that we can delete 70% of our respective organizations and put the other 30% to work. But Binney is also the author of Thin Thread, which is a way of doing deep discovery in unstructured databases and the internet. And so he is prepared to actually help us do pedophilia tracking worldwide. And one of the things that the other technical commission, Stephen Arnold, is very good at is de-anonymizing the internet. This includes every image having a fingerprint. So you can take an image of a child being abused, and you can track that image through the dark web. So there are resources that we can bring to bear in support of this commission's mission. My favorite technical commission is Arno Reuser from the Netherlands, who is a master librarian. He is so good that when the Dutch intelligence community realized it didn't know enough about the world, they recruited him to create the Open Source Intelligence Center for Dutch intelligence. And as with the endeavors that I helped create in the United States, and in fact for Scotland Yard, very quickly people found out that they could get 40 to 60% of what they knew very cheaply using open sources of information. That's not what government intelligence agencies do today. They want to spend as much money as possible in the riskiest way possible on the most expensive way possible. They're not actually there to do decision support or answer questions. So I believe that Arno Roiser is capable of creating the world's first digital library on pedophilia. And this would be a multilingual library to include local dialects. And it would be a library that would then end up being what we call a magnet for walk-ins. We want to have a very professional ingestion system so that people can volunteer to provide expert witness to the thing, or they can volunteer to offer up their papers. There are a number of pedophiles now who are actually ready to turn over their diaries. All right. So I think we're actually doing something really, really huge. My final comment. The center of gravity for taking down the deep state. Pedophilia is both the induction glue. Pedophilia is how the deep state recruits and controls people. It is also the Achilles heel of the deep state. I believe that once the public realizes that the government is not protecting their children at a scale of vulnerability that we can articulate, then everything else about the government is called into question. All right? So for me, this is a truly righteous endeavor. And I will end by saying that as much good as it might do to get the British angry, for me, the center of gravity for change is the American public. Because if you can get the American public angry, we will stop supporting dictators overseas. We will close all of our military bases overseas. I am on record as a former CIA operations officer is saying that our 1,000 bases overseas are not there for national defense. They're there to serve as lily pads for the smuggling of guns, gold, cash, drugs, and small children. So let me say I am proud to be in your company, and I believe that no matter what we do or do not do, it is going to make a difference. God bless you all.
Okay, that was Robert Steele from International Tribunal. And you can look them up, by the way, if you want to go to their website. It's itnj.org. And like I say, it's an inquiry into human trafficking and child sex abuse. But let's continue on now. Let's see what's happening just recently and the absurdity of how the media covers this. This has to do with Cardinal Pell of Australia, who was recently arrested for being a pedophile, basically, child abuse. And listen how the news covers him. This is from Australia News.
George Pell has plunged from the pulpit to prisoner as he prepares to spend his first night locked up. The disgraced cardinal abandoned an application for bail today as his barrister described his sexual offending as plain vanilla, and two former prime ministers defended their friend, court reporter Eliza Rugg.
George Pell's final moments of freedom.
We got you, pal. Got you, George.
Suffocated by a media scrum and protesters, the child abuser had nowhere to hide. Hours later, neither did defence lawyer Robert Richter when his client was remanded in custody to await his jail sentence.
How will he go behind bars?
I don't think I've ever commented on any of that. I hope well.
In court this morning, Cardinal George Pell used a walking stick as he entered the dock. The 77-year-old closed his eyes and put his hands over his face as prosecutors outlined the sickening abuse that he inflicted on two choir boys at St. Patrick's Cathedral in 1996. These acts were humiliating and degrading towards each boy. A degree of callous indifference was exhibited by the cardinal. The prisoner has shown no remorse or insight. In a six-minute assault in the priest's sacristy after Sunday Mass, pictures of the scene revealed for the first time. The then Archbishop of Melbourne violated both children. And 1 month later, the senior church leader again attacked one of the victims. The chief judge described Pell's crimes as brazen. He had in his mind a sense of impunity. How else did he think he would get away with this? He exploited two vulnerable boys. The Cardinal's lawyers claimed it was low-level offending, describing the then 13-year-old victims as naughty for stealing the sacramental wine that Pell caught them drinking. There was no pre-planning. There was no use of an implement. The offending was very short. This is no more than a plain, vanilla sexual penetration case.
Are you kidding me? Here's their defense. Their defense is that the boys were naughty because they drank the sacramental wine. Now, I'm not even too sure how to even call that a defense, but they go on to say there was no pre-planning. It was just spontaneous, I guess. That makes it okay. There was no use of an implement. Give me a break. What implements are they talking about that's normal? The offending was very short. Yeah, sure, it didn't last long. This is no more than a plain vanilla sexual penetration case. How did we get here? This is no more than a plain sexual penetration case by a priest that was victimized by two young boys drunk on wine. This is where we're going with this? I mean, I don't even know what to say half the time when I hear things like this, because this is happening all the time, and they make it sound like this is one case. This is in Australia. This is just one case, but this has been going on for hundreds of years, centuries. This has been going on since the beginning of time, but now it's starting to come out because, well, the internet, for one thing, is helping flush this out. When you watch the normal news, yeah, you get a little bit of it, but they're actually defending this guy because he was a victim of these two young kids that drank some wine. And even if he did do something, he didn't use an implement. I guess that makes it, but maybe I've been out of this realm for too long, but that makes it less of a crime because he didn't use an implement, which brings up all kinds of things in my brain that just hurts my brain. And the offending was short, so that's better than it being long. And it was plain. And I'm not too sure what vanilla means, but it was a quick penetration case without an implement. So this makes him, I don't know, less guilty? Seems like it would make him even more guilty. Just seems like the lawyer would be guilty in this case. It's ridiculous. Let's go and listen to a little bit more.
The newly installed Archbishop of Melbourne
left me very surprised, shocked at the outcome of this second trial.
You're surprised a little he was bit, convicted?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my God. And I say, oh, my God, because it's my God. I know my God has nothing to do with their God, in this particular case especially. This guy is the guy that's taking over for Cardinal Pell, and he's surprised. And this is what gets me. I wrote a book a few years back called To Believe or Not to Believe, The Social and Neurological Consequences of Belief Systems. And one of the things I brought out in the book is I think we have to hold everybody accountable. I don't care if they're just a small-town priest or a nun. Because if I knew about this stuff when I was 16, rode a motorcycle, went to high school, a Protestant, and not that well-educated at 16, I knew about this stuff. So you can't tell me that every single priest and nun on this planet doesn't know about this. And they're not saying anything. They're putting the sanctity of the church as being far more important than our children. These are our kids that they're molesting and using for sex abuse. And it gets even darker. Now, I warned you before you started listening to this. This is going to get a little dark. But if we don't have the inner strength to start looking, this is how they get away with it, is the people that's out there in society that just goes, oh, no, 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 this is just a little bit too much for me. Well, what if it was their child or their grandchild? Would it still be too much? What if they were forced to watch? Would it still be too much? I mean, where do you draw the line? Just because it's other people's kids, it's okay. We don't need to think about this. I'm a little bit in a strange mood right now, I admit, but this really gets me. This is one subject that really gets me because there's other evidence out there, and like the tribunal, he brought up about 2,000 kids a day go missing. And this is happening in hospitals and all over the place. You can't believe when you start really looking into this, what's going on. And a lot of these kids are being used, like he was talking about. About 2 years old, they're all used up. They've been raped, molested, and totally worn out by the time they're 2, 3, 4 years old. Then they're handed over to groups, satanic groups, for sacrifice. Now, I don't know. I'm just sitting here thinking about this and wondering, you know, like, do I really want to put this out there and talk about this stuff? No. But somebody has to do this. And I mean, I'd rather be talking about meditation, increasing my spiritual consciousness. There's a thousand things that's going on the planet that are really, really good, positive things. But underneath the radar, this is happening. And until we heal and start treating the very vulnerable part of our society better, with more sanctity, we're not going to go anywhere. We're not going to evolve. We're not going to wake up as a planet. We're going to cease to survive, because the way things are going, you know, like Einstein said, we're never going to come up with the solutions from the same level of thinking that created the problems. Well, just substitute thinking with consciousness. We have to evolve. That's the only way out of this. And the only way we're going to evolve is by looking at what's going on, the darkness, embracing it, and healing it. And there might even come a time when we have to find these people and forgive them and help them heal. Even now, they're going into some of the prisons and digging these people out of cells and finding out what is it that made you do this? What is going on out there in these religious satanic groups? And this is happening in Hollywood and in our government, in our churches. You know, let's go on and listen to a little bit more, and I'll get back to you.
Will you visit him in jail if he goes?
Yes.
As soon as possible?
As soon as I can get in, yeah. I stand by my friends. I'd stand by victim friends too.
Jesus. These people get to me sometimes. I mean, he's going to go visit his friend in prison, and he even stands by his victimized friends. Remember the victim? Cardinal Pell, that was victimized by two very, very young boys that drank some wine. I mean, and this is the guy that's taken over for him. And this insanity just keeps on going. I mean, why don't they stand up and realize and start talking about the fact that this is a problem within the church? I mean, think about this. Just think about this for a second. What if I was to say, okay, let's create an organization, whether it's the Catholic Church or the Boys Club or whatever. Let's create an organization that on the surface doesn't allow any sex. We're going to suppress all of the sex, suppress that to death. And we're only going to attract men and small children. And let's do this and see what happens. I mean, you would think that I'm totally out of my mind. But yet this is what we've done. And what happens, it starts out maybe for good reasons. I have my doubts about the Catholic Church, but starts out for good reasons, like the Boys Club. But it attracts pedophiles. I mean, how could it not? If you are a pedophile and you're out after small children, where are you going to go? You're going to go where small children are at. And in the case of the church, it's like perfect because you're protected. You're completely protected by the church. And we could go into the darkness of this, and it does get very, very dark. But I'm trying to maintain myself a little bit to make it palpable, because you can only handle so much of this. And it can hurt your brain to the point to where you will stop hearing the words and concepts that I'm even talking about right now. Trust me, it gets that bad. But let's go on and listen to a little bit more. You know, but maybe first, let me straighten something out here, because I might have given you the impression that this is just happening by accident and not design. But I remember my wife and I, we had dinner with David Icke a while back, and I asked him at the dinner table, I said, David, if I'm doing my research and really looking into these various subjects, what is the first main thing I need to keep in mind? He tells me that nothing, and he looked at me dead cold. He says, nothing is what it appears to be, first of all. And he says, then when you go to this other level, you start realizing that this is all designed and planned. I think it was Rockefeller said that nothing ever happens in the government by accident. If it happens, it's been planned and it's been designed. Everything that's going on right now on the planet. This is a short little thing by David Icke. Let's listen to this and we'll get back.
The world is not random. The world is moving in the direction it is because it's been planned to do that. These entities operate in the unseen, overwhelmingly in the unseen. They want to control the information that people receive. One of the greatest forms of mind control, repetition, repetition, repetition.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
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 If you want people to have a certain perception of a world event, the world in general, of who we are and the nature of reality, then control what people receive and then control their perception. Once they've got your perceptions, they've got you. Trump is the equivalent of a Hollywood actor on the movie screen. While we are focusing on this minutiae of Trump, anti-Trump, left, right, and all this nonsense that we get caught into, Silicon Valley is becoming the center of global control. This global conspiracy that I've been exposing for three decades is basically the hijacking of human perception. Because if there's a few of you, and compared with the target population of 7.5 billion, something like that now, the number of people in full knowledge of what they're doing is tiny.
Hundreds, thousands.
Thousands maximum. At the core, hundreds at the core. At the core of the core, even less. And the rest of the structure is fiercely compartmentalized. So people are daily different parts of this global web structure playing a part in pushing the world in the direction I'm talking about, to this centralized world dictatorship, without realizing that's what they're doing. It's a tiny, tiny number. So given the mathematics, you can't physically control your target population. There's not enough of you. Yes, you can do it through people in uniform, which is manipulating the target population to police the target population, but you can't do it en masse. What you need to do is control the perceptions of the population, because perception is everything. Perception dictates what you believe, what you don't believe, what you'll challenge, what you won't challenge, what you'll accept, you won't accept, support, everything. Once they've got your perceptions, they've got you, and they've got your life, and they've got the collective perception, they have humanity. This is why they want to control the information that people receive and to marginalize alternative ways of looking at the world. Because where do perceptions come from? They come from information received. It might be a personal experience information, or it might be the 10 o'clock news. But with most people, it's going to be the 10 o'clock news, but it's information. So if you want people to have a certain perception of a world event, the world in general, of who we are and the nature of reality, then control what people receive, and then you'll control their perception. So when I look at the world, I see vast numbers of people who are perceptually programmed. And when I, you know, like I break it down in the book, when you look at a human life, it's basically a perceptual programming and download from cradle to grave. You know, you come out of the womb and immediately you're influenced by your parents in terms of your perceptions. And they're not being malevolent, most of the time anyway, the vast majority, but they've been through the system you're about to go through, the process you're about to go through. They've bought it, accepted it as normal, accepted the crazy place to be sane, and therefore out of wanting to do right for you, they'll pass those perceptions on to you. And then, and this is, you know, take a deep breath, take a step back, look at it again. When you think about it, Brian, you know, you come out of the womb, and within 4 years, you've only just got here. You're sitting at a desk with an authority figure representing the state's version of everything in front of you, telling you when you have to be there, when you can leave, when you can speak, when you can go to the toilet, when you can eat, what is, what isn't, what's possible, what's not possible, and the nature of everything. And this goes on all the way through your formative years into higher education, if that's where you go. And it's a download of normal, a perception of normal. What I call it the postage stamp consensus. It's a narrow band of sense of the possible, which has basically been repeated. One of the greatest forms of mind control, repetition, 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 all the way through your formative years. You then go out from there into the institutions. You become a journalist, you become a politician, you become a doctor, you become a scientist, you become a CEO, whatever. And you take with you into that those institutions this core version of normal. And when you go as a young person into those institutions are already pillars, solidified concrete pillars of the same sense of normal. So now you've left school, but where you're working is still confirming to you that the madhouse is sane and normal is how things are. A journalist who's doing a story on a medical condition will not go to a complementary practitioner who may have had great success in treating the particular ailment they're writing about. They'll go to a doctor. The doctor will give him the song sheet, postage stamp consensus version of that problem.
And so normal are kind of what we believe about medicine,
everything.
Capitalism, government, all these things are these normals that we've been programmed.
Because it's basically, Brian, all people here. I call it the mainstream everything. The mainstream media, mainstream science, mainstream medicine, mainstream journalism, it's all unknowing, most of them, the vast majority, agents of the postage stamp consensus. Then you add the fact that the global media, now 24/7, is reporting world events constantly, in all their multiple different ways, from the same postage stamp normal. So, you know, people like me who left the postage stamp a long time ago and it passed over the horizon a long time ago, we're crazy, not by breaking down what we're saying, but by reflex action, because that's not normal, that's not on the postage stamp. Then you look at politics, and we've got a choice between left, right, and center, what's called the political class. That's very, very true, political class, but I would call it something else. It's the postage stamp consensus political class, because the left in politics is on the left of the postage stamp, the center's somewhere in the center, and the right's on the right of the postage stamp. But they're all on the postage stamp, still coming from this perception of normal that is about, you know, use another analogy about the size of a pea.
It's the illusion of choice.
Yeah, exactly. Then you have peer pressure, because all those people who, the vast majority, have accepted this download of normal, you know, like with the blinkers on, I have no problem with that. If you want to give your mind away to someone else's perceptual program, fine. The problem comes when those people think that they can then dictate, ridicule, intimidate those that have a different view. Because that's psychological fascism for me. Up to this point, they have manipulated human perception by manipulating the information people receive. The plan is to go beyond that, where they are the perception. And what I'm talking about, of course, is artificial intelligence, which brings us back to the devil's playground, Silicon Valley. Because that is increasingly the center. In the shadows is where it's coming from. But in terms of the world that you can see, Silicon Valley is becoming the center of global control. Not only is it driving, people would be shocked to see how deep Google, oh, it's just a search engine, and Facebook, oh, it's just a social media platform, to see how deep they are in the transhumanist agenda of connecting the human brain to artificial intelligence so that artificial intelligence becomes the human mind. And that's not me pulling this out of the ether. I'm quoting there a Google executive, Ray Kurzweil, one of the global PR men for Frankenstein.
Is he a Google exec? I know he's at Singularity University.
He's a Google exec at the Singularity University. Yeah. And he has said that by 2030, and that's a date, a year that keeps coming up again and again, 2030, the human brain will be started to be connected to artificial intelligence. And I'm quoting Kurzweil here. And then artificial intelligence will do more and more of human thinking until there is no human thought and artificial intelligence is doing it all. Now, why are they openly saying this now? Because the sales pitch is it will make us superhuman. So isn't that great? Getting the population, especially the young, will be the adults then, addicted to technology is all about the here, kitty, 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 preparing people to accept this. So you've got that agenda at the end of this road of the human mind as we know it being replaced by artificial intelligence. But out of the same, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, out of the same devil's playground, Silicon Valley, is coming the Google, Facebook, etc., algorithmic censorship more and more of the alternative media using various excuses. Because what they do is this, they'll give you an excuse, oh, we've got to stop jihadis. Okay, right? So, oh yeah, we'll stop jihadis. Okay. And then they widen it and widen it. It's not jihadis anymore. It's people like me. It's and other people that are questioning the official narrative and they pull them in. So the alternative media is under tremendous pressure now and suppression because it's challenging the narrative. And that changes perception. Change perception, you change the world.
Exactly. If you change perception, you will change the world. And that's what this is about. It's about changing our perception, but we can't change our perception unless we really start looking at how the world is that they have manufactured while we were all asleep. And right now, I live in Magalia. It's up above Paradise, where the Paradise fires happened. And I have to tell you, it knocked on our door pretty heavily. Our house made it through because we live high enough and it was moist enough up here. And I think they just finally decided to put the fires out, probably. And that's another show altogether. But this puts me in a pretty particularly precarious kind of a situation. Even with the fire, I've been talking to fire captains that are active fire captains, and some of them are retired, and they're all saying the same thing. This fire was not normal. We'll have to do a show on that at some point. But back to the topic at hand, I really encourage you to please go out and do your own research, because you could sit here and listen to me, and it's hopefully I can motivate you to get out there and really start looking at what's going on in the world, because these are our kids, our children. And this rabbit hole gets even stranger when you bring in the idea of entities involved in this, because sometimes I have to ask myself, when I really look at myself and really being honest, I see a bank robber, for instance. I can see myself robbing a bank if I got that desperate. My family was starving and the banks are robbing us, and I could justify that pretty easy, to be honest with you. Don't know if I should tell people that, but I can see myself doing that. But some of the things that these people are doing with other human beings and human trafficking and child sex abuse, believe me, when you really, really understand what they are doing, it takes on another dimension, especially when you start getting into the energetics of it. If you've never listened to Credo Mukdwa, you should listen to what he has to say. He's a Zulu shamanic priest, but he's well-educated in England. And he talks about a time when he was abducted when he was 10 in Africa, out in the little jungle communities. And he says it's well known that they tell you, be careful when you go out at night, be careful and don't go out alone, because there are entities, reptilian entities out there that will abduct you. And he says he was taken down into a underground cavern and sodomized, and it did things to his mind, his root chakra, that I don't even want to discuss right now. But if this is even true, and it there's something to it because there's too many people saying it's happening to them, if it's true, we need to really wake up. I mean, I've heard Linda Moulton Howe talk a little bit about this, and she touches on the subject, and she has to back off because this gets very, very strange. If we have interdimensional entities or entities living underneath the ground, like when Credo Mukdwa and many, many others, by the way, that have talked about when they're taken to these underground installations, they have fires going, and it just reminds me of what the Bible talks about with the devil and Lucifer being down under the ground in hell with fire and brimstone. You know, people back in those days, they may have been taken also. If we're being taken, they were too. And they talk about flying saucers. They call them clouds. The Hindus call them vimanas. Every culture on this earth talks about beings that's come down from out of the sky, landed here, and have been abducting us and doing experiments on us. So this thing with children missing, and that brings up another thing too. There's a book out called 411, the missing people, missing from national parks and stuff. That's a good one too, because there's hot spots all over the planet, but in the United States, there are hot spots, especially in national forests, where kids are missing, and they're missing mysteriously. Like one child, his parents was walking right with the kid, and the kid was like just a couple steps behind him. They looked behind, he was nowhere to be found. They looked for almost 4 weeks for this child. They didn't find anything. And after 4 weeks, they finally found a shoe in one place, and miles away, they found another shoe. There's no way the kid could have walked that distance, for one thing, and why would it take off its shoe? I mean, that's just one case. There's many, many, many really highly mysterious cases. You know, I was listening to this guy talk on Coast to Coast, and it's just one more aspect of a very, very complex problem. And what makes it complex is our court system and how we protect. Somehow we give special dispensation to churches and corporations. And I am privy to some information that I can't share with you right yet. I'm getting close. I'm going to be interviewing these people. They're in England and Canada. But let me put it this way. We have our court system where we're corporate entities. You know, that's the reason all of your names are in uppercase. That means you are a corporate entity. And when you go to court, that's the only thing that they can interact with, is you as a corporate entity. But you have to admit that you're a corporate entity. That's why they say, could you please state your name for the records? Well, if you don't state your name and you say that I am a free living human being, I am not that person that you're looking at on that piece of paper, don't even say that you're not that name. Don't even speak the name. That doesn't allow them to interact with you appropriately according to the legal system, especially if you don't have a lawyer. Why is that? It's because there's another court system on top of that that has to do with constitutional law and living, breathing beings like us. But come to find out, there's an even another higher law that dates back to the Sumerian times. And that's what these tribunals are basing a lot of their law on now. And they're actually convicting people from these higher levels of legality that goes way beyond the court system that we know of. A quick analogy would be if I live here in my house and I could make it a law in this house, my law, that you can kill, rape, pillage, plunder, whatever you want to do. Okay, as long as we're in this house and nobody out there knows about it, well, that's the law and we could get away with it. Until the outside law enforcement finds out what's going on and draws us into their law enforcement center and their court system, now that overrides my little laws of this house. Well, these other systems overrides their laws. And this is going to get real interesting. One of the first steps the one group is taking is against smart meters. And they're suing people. They're piercing the corporate shield by using these laws. And they're actually putting lawsuits on individuals, CEOs, and people inside the corporation. And the charge is invasion of your space because the smart meters are actually invading your space. So there's a lot going on, and we can use these other ways of handling life, but we have to escape the court system. The judges, the lawyers, the district attorneys, for the most part, I hate to say it, but on those upper levels, they're in it. The United Nations, watch the movie The Whistleblower. You'll see the United Nations, the Red Cross, all of these organizations over there that are supposedly doing good. You know, they're over there shuffling people around. And like I say, there was the one time in L.A., Melvin Whiteberg, he's a pathologist. He failed to pay on his storage container. So they went there and they found 17,000 aborted babies. I mean, how does this happen in the United States of America? 17,000 aborted babies? I mean, give me a break. But I'm going to try to leave this on a up note. And I'm trying to think what the up note would be other than the fact that, you know, once you know what the darkness is and you identify it, you can start dealing with it. And I hope these shows help you and give you a way to see life and change your perception of it, because everything that we see, taste, and touch, and feel is part of a matrix, and we're deep down in the matrix, deep. But as you start waking up, it's like that early morning when you start waking up and the dream starts fading and loses its control over you, and you realize you've been dreaming. There comes a point where you can't go back to sleep, and you don't even want to. Even if it's uncomfortable, it's cold out, and your aching body, and you have to get up and use the restroom, and you have to eat, you have to take care of the three-dimensional physical needs, but it's okay, because you know the dream was a dream and it was unreal. And we're getting to that point on this planet, I believe, where we're realizing the dream is just a dream within a dream, and a lot of people waking up. So I hope you continue listening to my show, and I'm going to continue bringing you things that might be uncomfortable, even if I end up being the guy you hate to love. But somebody has to do this, and there's a lot of people out there right now trying their best to wake people up to what's going on in the dark shadows, not only of our world, but in people's minds, because that's where it starts. Thank you, and I'll see you in a couple weeks.